fear. And so I just want to read like a couple of lines from the book, page 67 here. And this is in the fourth step where we're talking about, you know, fear and doing the resentment inventories. But this part that says this short word, fear, somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And, you know, that was definitely my experience growing up. I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home, but I grew up in one with all the same effed up dynamics as the alcoholic home. I had a really emotionally abusive, kind of narcissistic, larger than, you know, life dad. And then I had this very sweet, codependent, perfectionistic mom. So I came by all of my controlling, fixing, really honestly. And, you know, my experience growing up was being in fear all the time. You know, my experience was it was not like the world was not a safe place to be in. You know, I was constantly waiting for the shoe to drop. I was constantly on edge. I was constantly just in this state of hypervigilance for trying to think three or four steps ahead, trying to avoid the next blow up, to avoid my dad's wrath, you know, to avoid the next thing that I would do that would cause me to have the attention, the negative attention on me, you know? And you know, I think growing up that way, you know, there were just these kind of fundamental fear-based beliefs that got ingrained in me. I was thinking about this during the meditation. I had this client years and years ago who was talking about her parenting style of her baby and, you know, newborn baby and toddler. And she said this thing that really stuck with me. She said, you know, I want my child to have an experience of a benevolent universe. And it really struck me. I didn't agree with all of her parenting approaches, but it struck me that that's not something you can teach someone in their head, you know, that there's an experience that the world's a safe place. And I did not grow up with that. I grew up with the idea, you know, expressed or unexpressed, it was just my experience was like, it's not a safe place and I'm not okay, right? Like, I'm not okay the way that I am. But if I can twist myself into enough of a pretzel and, you know, be really, really on guard, I can kind of get through without being and getting in too much trouble, right? Or making it worse, right? My whole goal was like if you think of those, it's like the equator, right? Is like zero, right? And then there's negative all the way down to 10 and all the way up to 10 or whatever it is. I was not going for like joy and happiness and, you know, these great experiences. I just wanted to stay out of trouble, you know, out of a problem. And so, you know, other people were not people that I could trust. I didn't have an experience of being able to trust that the people around me were going to keep me safe, emotionally safe, physically safe sometimes. And so, you know, this way of experiencing the world, you know, it, for me, and I think for a lot of people, it gave rise to all these coping strategies to then deal with that. And those things were so ingrained in me and so just became part of my personality, you know, that is just how I function, is the way that I felt, you know, that ease and comfort, that idea that I would, that it was, you know, I could get through, that I could be okay. And, you know, so I embarked on a very early career of fixing myself. You know, I mean, I was as rabid as I was to fix other people, I was even worse, you know, in trying to fix myself, because early on, I started taking psychology classes like in high school, and I learned that, oh, my family is screwed up, so I'm going to be screwed up, but I'm going to screw up my kids, so I guess I shouldn't have kids. And if I do, you know, I better work really, really hard to fix all this stuff. And I really had a long career of that. You know, I became a therapist when I was like 22, and worked as a therapist, have worked as a coach for 20 years, have done every self-help self-improvement program on the planet, including a lot of spirituality. But it was always in that context of like trying to get to that comfortable place, trying to use my mind to fix my mind, which is not, doesn't work that well, you know? I mean, the weird thing about it is it worked for a while and it worked to some degree. You know, if I had like time and space and I was going to go do some workshop or do some self-help program, I could identify my beliefs that were limiting and not working for me. And I could, you know, kind of sort it all out and create this new thing and practice that. And, you know, it would work to some degree, but the default was still this experience of fear. And over time, I didn't even have the experience of fear in the sense, like the feeling of fear. Right? Like I didn't walk around in my 20s feeling afraid all day. I thought I felt fine, you know, for the most part. Or I was resentful, or I was angry, or I was, you know, isolating, or I was depressed, or I was, you know, but it didn't feel like fear anymore because there were no circumstances around me that were clearly like, you know, causing some kind of fight or flight response. It was just the context for the whole thing. So, you know, I didn't know that my resentments were driven by fear. I didn't know that my trying to fix other people or that just feeling of never being able to just get out of my head and just relax and just have a good time and not have to be working on something or myself or being productive or, you know, all those things. And so I would get this high from working on myself and feeling like I was getting somewhere. And then when there was no stress or there was no problem or there was no crisis, I just felt kind of empty. So I had like these two modes, I guess, either like this kind of high of stress or this like boredom depression thing. And it was like, you know, it was not a positive experience. And like all addictions, you know, progressed and got a lot worse. So by the time I found myself in BBA almost 4 years ago, I had spent 13 years trying to fix my autistic son. That didn't work. And fix myself because I couldn't be this perfect mom that he needed me to be in order to not, you know, be violent and scary to me. And, you know, it was just like this, it had come to like this fever pitch. And the thing that I found in working the controller fixer steps in BBA that I really just never found anywhere else was this, and I remember it hitting me so strongly when I read it in the book, this idea of crossing from the bridge of reason to the shore of faith, that I had so many spiritual beliefs. I mean, I had a licensure as a spiritual practitioner. I was doing spiritual counseling. I believed in God, but it was all intellectual. You know, I just had to keep getting myself there. And that gap between reason and faith, it was just so elusive to me. And it was such a vulnerable thing to cross that bridge, to give up knowing, to actually surrender and the set aside prayer would like fucked me up, you know, excuse my language, but you know, the set aside prayer was for a controller fixer like me is the toughest thing on the planet because everything I think I know is everything I've ever relied on. Like I've always been, my thinking has been my God, you know, that's the only thing I could count on. And so if I couldn't trust my thinking, I just thought I was screwed. And so walking through the steps in the way that we do in the BBA to get to a place where I could see so clearly and could feel the kind of just the despair and the bankruptcy of going about it the way I was, to get to the point where, you know, I didn't have a choice really, but to practice surrender, to let go of what I thought I knew for an open mind and a new experience and for this possibility of God, even though when I really looked at it with all these beliefs that I had no idea. I didn't know what God was. I didn't have an experience of, I never had felt God. I had just thought, oh yeah, that sounds good. That sounds better. That sounds more empowering. I'll try that on, you know? And for me today, you know, it's the, to me, the experience, the I want to say, but it's like, to me, God, you know, I have my own conception of God, and it's, you know, it's pretty hard to wrap my brain around. It's not a, you know, particular religious belief, but I think that the closest thing I can say to it is just love. You know, it's the absence of fear. It's what that client was talking about a benevolent universe. Like, there's goodness, there's love, you know, and I can think about that, and that's great. But can, if I really can have an experience of that, like if I can really clear away enough rut, you know, of the stuff and the stuff that blocks me through doing the steps, then I can actually have enough quietness for the fear to just give just a little bit of room for me to have that experience of love, that's really the truth, that and if I really feel like, oh, love is like, this is love, this is my experience, is that love is what is the truth of me and of other people and of life, then there's not really all that much to be afraid of. There's not that much to try and control. There's not that many outcomes to try and manipulate and manage and make happen, because, you know, why would me and my fear-based small little controlling mind be able to create a better outcome than, you know, the loving creative energy of the world? You know, like, it's just kind of a silly thing when you think about it that way. So, you know, all the self-knowledge has been helpful, but it just didn't get me there until I had the chance to just practice this way of life, practice 10 and 11, practice, you know, all of the different principles that continuously take me out of this default fear-based mind and put me into an experience where I can be open to experiencing God, which is, in my conception, love, you know, that I can be of service because that allows love to move through me. And for me, when love moves through me and I'm of service to someone else, I get to have an experience of it because it's coming through here, you know? And if it's not me trying to fix someone or take care of somebody, it's, you know, there's like that experience of just love. And when there's not scarcity and there's not, you know, the next disaster to avoid, then it's, you know, as scary as it was to surrender, and it is every freaking day, you know, to not know and to not rely on that, it's when I do it, it's such a relief. You know, it was like, I remember going to my emotional sobriety meeting first time I did the steps, and I was in step one, and I had to pull off the side of the road. I was crying so hard, I thought I was going to throw up. I'm like driving on the side of the road, you know, like it was some serious fear, you know, that I, you know, to think of surrendering or to think of letting go is just so terrifying. It's like the terror of intimacy with myself and life. And thanks, Andy. And you know, but when I do it, every damn time that I let go, it's the biggest relief. It's like, I don't have to carry the weight of the world on my shoulders. You know, it's the burden is gone. I can relax. I can just be a servant of God's universe, and I don't have to figure the whole thing out, and I can just be here and be present, and it's a whole lot better way to live. So that's all I got. Thanks for having me share. It's great to be here.